So you know that old saying, one tequila, two tequila, three tequila floor? Well, with celebrities nowadays, it's more like five tequila, six tequila, seven, eight, nine, more. Michael Jordan, Kendall Jenner, The Rock, Nick Jonas, dozens of stars, big and whatever, now have their own tequila labels. Now, while some makers and fans cry cultural appropriation, the celebrities themselves, Etu, lead singer for Third Eye Blind, they're all cashing in. I'm Gustavo Arellano. You're listening to The Times, daily news from the LA Times. Today's Monday, August 30th, 2021. Hurricane Ida hits Louisiana as a Category 4 storm with winds of 150 miles per hour. In Afghanistan, a U.S. drone destroyed an explosives-laden vehicle thought to be heading to the Kabul airport. Afghans say the drone strike also killed civilians, including children. And legendary actor and activist Ed Asner has died at 91. He's most famous for his TV roles as Lou Grant and for being that voice of the old guy in the Pixar film Up. But his best role was as the evil developer Ed Wunsler in the cartoon version of the Boondocks, where he was straight savage. Rest in power, Ed. Tequila is a natural drink of Mexico, wrapped up in the country's mythology via film, song, and art. But makers themselves have long relied on American consumers for their bottom line. In 2020, 72% of all tequila produced was exported to the United States. Now celebrities see Mexican spirits as a way to expand their brand and make easy bucks. Our guest today, LA Times Mexico correspondent Kate Linthicum. And I'll also do a taste test with my colleagues to see which is the best celebrity tequila of them all, and which is just blech. We'll get to that in a bit. And stick around until the end, I mean, you should always. But this time, we also have a profile of an athlete who's competing in the Paralympic Games. But first, we're going to hear from Kate. Recently, she did a big story about the rise of celebrity tequila and traveled to the heart of tequila country, the city of tequila itself, in the state of Jalisco. Kate, welcome to The Times.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Tequila is usually associated with the state of Jalisco, but specifically two regions, the city of Tequila itself and the area, and then another area called Los Altos de Jalisco, which translates as the Highlands, this almost mythical place in Mexican culture that's also supposed to be the birthplace of mariachi. So just describe those two regions.
So Tequila is located in a really beautiful valley just outside of the city of Guadalajara. It's hot, drier, and Los Altos is a region about 2 or 3 hours away that's a lot higher. That's why it's called Los Altos. And it's known for having this really amazing soil. So things grow really well there. And if you're like a tequila connoisseur, you can tell which tequila comes from agaves in which place just by tasting it. Because, you know, agaves have a really different flavor depending on where they grow.
In both of these regions, of course, you see a lot of agave because that's where they grow tequila, big ranches, the charro culture. So, you know, for Americans, we're talking about the guys in mariachi outfits, horses, you know, a lot of stereotypes of Mexican romance and all that.
Yeah, there is kind of a lot of romanticization, I think, that happens there. But it's also like a really real culture, you know. Tequila was born in these regions about 500 years ago. And the process of making it is kind of fantastic and amazing. It's like an artisanal process, you know, that is really specific. And I think that's one of the reasons that celebrity tequilas have gotten under people's skin, because a celebrity coming there and kind of buying into this industry kind of goes against what tequila is supposed to be about, which is a bit more of a homegrown kind of thing.
Yeah, you can't just make tequila anywhere in Mexico, like, say, whiskey. You can make whiskey anywhere. The Mexican government limits where tequila is produced to Jalisco and certain parts of four other states. So the country has really invested itself historically in protecting tequila.
Right, absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, certain types of liqueurs that you could find in Europe, or champagne. You know, champagne is just sparkling wine from the Champagne region. But yeah, so Mexico has kind of tried to protect it with this thing called the denomination of origin, But the one thing Mexican law doesn't protect is who can own these companies. And so that's why you've seen just this flood of American and foreign capital in recent decades into this booming industry.
Let's give credit where credit's due. Sammy Hagar is the OG celebrity tequila maker, Cabo Wabo, oh God, back in the 1990s, named after his resort in Baja and cantinas and all that. So you had other celebrities over the years. I remember Carlos Santana released a tequila like in the early 2010s, but there was one celebrity, an actor in particular, whose tequila company was sold for $1 billion. And that's what really started this most recent celebrity tequila rush.
Right. So George Clooney and his friend Randy Gerber, who happens to be the husband of supermodel Cindy Crawford, started this tequila company in 2013. Basically, they paid a family to make tequila for them. And 5 years later, they sold the company to one of these big beverage conglomerates for $1 billion. So you're right. Like, celebrities have always been interested in tequila. And actually, Ball has been making a profit. You know, Sammy Hagar sold his brand for a ton, Santana as well. But when you hear $1 billion, like, that gets people's attention. So kind of overnight, according to people, you know, that I spoke to at these distilleries, they were just getting flooded with phone calls from Americans, mostly, who were like, what does it take to make my own tequila? I want to get in.
And Casamigos, which is was George Clooney's brand, is not even that good. It's not bad tequila, but when I heard $1 billion, when I started seeing the trucks with George Clooney riding a motorcycle through the agave, I'm like, really? Him?
And that's what people said, you know, when they saw Kendall Jenner riding a horse through the agave fields. It's like there's this very specific imagery and that celebrities are trying to tap into. But it's an interesting question, right? Like, it's not necessarily their imagery. It's not their culture. So that's where you run into those questions of, is this cultural appropriation? And what happens when, like, thousands of years of history are being reduced to, like, a marketing campaign for a famous person?
Yeah, what happens when Jorge Negrete and Lola Beltran are replaced by a third-eyed blind guy and Kendall Jenner? Totally.
Elon Musk. We got Tesla tequila now, too.
I know. Jesus. We'll have more after this break. Kate, this rush of tequila made by celebrities or being bought by celebrities has begun to transform the city of tequila itself. And you went down there, you went through the distilleries, and you talked to a couple people.
Yeah, tequila is madness. It was packed with tourists, you know, walking around holding these giant containers filled with, like, tequila drinks. People were partying. And the distilleries were all under construction. They're all being expanded. There are boutique hotels popping up everywhere. All of the agave farmers who are suddenly making bank all have new trucks and new tractors. So it's really impressive. Kind of, you can see the money coming into the region. And yeah, like, a lot of people are really excited. They think this is a really good thing. And then, you know, you have the traditionalists who have kind of this affinity for the older processes. And they say that with this boom of tequila production, you're losing some of the kind of processes that make really good tequila. And so you're sacrificing quality.
One of the people you talked to was a descendant of the original salsa. Here in the United States, salsa tequila is just terrible, terrible, terrible tequila. But this gentleman makes Fortaleza, which is an awesome, amazing tequila.
Yeah, Guillermo Erickson Sousa has an incredible story. His grandfather was running Sousa Tequila when he sold the brand to an Italian company in the 70s. And poor Guillermo, you know, he wanted to work in the tequila industry, but he couldn't because his grandpa had sold this company. So, like, 20, 30 years later, he managed to get up the money to basically start his own company doing tequila making the old-fashioned way. And his tequila is fabulous. I hope you can try some later at your tasting. And yeah, he had some really interesting things to say about just sort of the state of the tequila industry today.
I think that there's a place for each type of tequila, for each production methodology, and we're not for everybody and for people that really don't care about the taste. You know, they're going to slam a shot. Maybe they should just drink Fireball or something, you know, and a lot of people do drink Fireball, you know, but they'll eventually upgrade at some point in their life to something, and we hope they pick something that's authentic.
What's awesome about Fortaleza, it's based on a decades-old recipe. And this is one of the things that few people know about. And I wrote about this in my book, Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. Shameless plug there. But around the 1940s, the makers of tequila at the time in Mexico, they actually changed the recipe of tequila because more American consumers were starting to go down to like Acapulco, Tijuana. They would, of course, Juarez. They would taste the tequila. They thought it was too harsh. So we can talk about cultural appropriation, and the tequila makers themselves could say, or the people in tequila, like, I know, aquí vienen los gringos, here come the Americans, destroying our culture. But the tequila industry has always been about making money for themselves. No, who cares who buys it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's an interesting point that, you know, gringos have long been consumers of tequila and, you know, for decades have actually shaped how it tastes, you know, how it's marketed, how it's made. So that idea of like a pure kind of, you know, Mexico specific spirit is maybe like not actually so realistic.
You talked about Michael Jordan's tequila brand. Michael Jordan, the best basketball player of all time, but I haven't tasted his tequila. I might, but I don't want to drop $100 and some on something that someone said tasted like coconut water or something.
Yeah, I think it was like vanilla bean. Yeah, I mean, Michael Jordan is such an interesting case. You know, he's like really one of the first celebrities to understand that he is a brand and that he could make money beyond, you know, his day job, basketball, and be, you know, a spokesperson for Hanes underwear and McDonald's hamburgers, et cetera, et cetera. So it's totally predictable that he now has a tequila brand. It's called Cincorro. And it is quite expensive, and it's kind of marketed as this premium tequila that's unlike anything ever made before. But yeah, it's made in a facility that makes more than 100 other tequilas. It's kind of the same juice, the same tequila juice, just with different kind of flavor profiles added at the end. And yeah, the reviews are not good. In one review on the Tequila Matchmaker app, a reviewer described it as vanilla lifesaver candy flavor dipped in cocoa powder and said, basically, there's nothing here that is anywhere close to what a good traditionally made tequila strives to be. The bottle he was reviewing would set you back $130.
Oh, my Lord. And of course, my brother would probably buy him because he worships Jordan. And actually, here's the last question. When are you coming out with your own tequila brand?
Well, you know, I have to think of my name, the tequila name first. So I'm going to work on that and I'll get back to you.
La gringa chingona.
Ah, órale.
Thanks so much for this interview, Kate.
Thank you.
Coming up, myself and some colleagues, we taste celebrity tequila. Like what you're listening to? Then make sure to follow the Times on whatever platform you use. Don't make us, please, don't make us the Puccia Podcasts. We'll be back. You can't talk about celebrity tequila without tasting celebrity tequila. And I can't drink all the tequila myself, so I invited one of my colleagues and, you know, one of the friends of the LA Times. So Carolina E. Miranda is an arts columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Carolina, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Sara Valdez, she is one of the owners of Sarah's Market here in City Terrace. Sarah, what's up?
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So the episode is about celebrity tequila. And of course, one of the big things, at least with my friends, they get mad. They're like, Kendall Jenner has a tequila. George Clooney has a tequila. They talk about cultural appropriation. Why is this an issue? Or why do the gringos like Latin American culture so much? Carolina, because you'll bring the South American perspective, so.
Well, I mean, this goes back centuries. People have always been enamored in the United States with, you know, the sort of exoticness, the spiciness, the sort of the farawayness of Latin American culture. I mean, all the way from like the early Spanish fiestas here in Los Angeles to Disney, Walt Disney himself traveling all over Latin America and creating cartoons inspired by Latin America. I think, you know, there's a sense of this kind of Latin romance, Spanish romance that has always entranced.
And yet, Sarah, when it comes to some of these celebrities making tequilas or making beers or whatever, it seems like some celebrities can get away with it, but others can't. Let's put it this way. Can a celebrity make a superior product when it comes to alcohol?
I think they can. But my thing is, I think they need to work very closely with the producers and pay attention to what customers want, not just because slap their name on it, it's going to sell type of thing. I feel like they need to really work very closely with the consumers and the producers.
So now we're going to actually drink the tequila, but we're going to do an unboxing. I bought 4 tequilas, 1 magnificent tequila, then 3, I have no idea. And the magnificent tequila, we talk about tradition. You can't get more traditional than this one. Fortaleza tequila. So I'm going to pass it around for you folks and just describe the bottle. What do you think?
Initially, when I first see it, I get a strong presence, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's not strong. I don't mean strong as in like the alcohol content. It's just strong as in like if it had an attitude, it'd be like a heavy, strong, like demands respect attitude.
And then you have on the top, you have a piña, the heart of the agave. That's how you make tequila from roasting that and getting the juices. Carolina.
This is one of my favorites. So I'm glad we're starting with one of my favorite tequilas. In fact, my friend Ed and I drink so much of it, we call it the mouthwash. And in fact, he uses empty Fortaleza bottles to store his mouthwash. That's how much he loves Fortaleza. So I'm very happy to have this in the mix today.
Yeah, this is going to be our base. We're going to start with that, and then we're going to taste these other ones. Right now, we're just seeing the bottles. Okay, next bottle, and I do not know the order. Okay. Teremana Tequila by The Rock.
Oh.
So this is The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock's tequila. What do you think of the bottle, Sarah?
Okay, it's I don't feel it has a heavy presence. It feels classic and clean is what it looks like to me. The font is simple. There's not too much on the label. Like the backgrounds you get, like the agaves that's on the plant. But it looks like a classic clean label.
Awesome. Carolina?
I would have to agree. You have this like beautiful landscape painting on it, the sans serif fonts. This is definitely dolled up rock, not wrestling rock.
Okay, next up. Oh boy. Haha Tequila. It's by these influencers named Martin Tabelli and Martin Hofstein. Maybe our producer Marina, she's younger than us, so she might know who they are. Haha Tequila, Sarah.
Okay, the Haha Tequila. Bright. It looks like a fun bottle. Haha, which is why it says haha. Yes, I feel like we're going to be laughing it up a storm with this one. Yep. I like the pinkness that's on here.
Pink and tequila.
I think it will attract me specifically because of the colors.
Carolina.
Yeah, this is definitely your attractive Southwestern color palette, you know, Phoenix Airport gift shop kind of colors, which I like. I mean, you know, I say it half jokingly. It's also obviously designed for Instagram because this will be instantly recognizable. While some of the other labels are a little bit more ornate or quiet, something like this is going to pop. The name is just beyond stupid. I could not order this with a straight face at a restaurant. Like, oh, what kind of tequila would you like, ma'am? Can I get the haha, please? It's like, no.
Yeah.
Thank you, influencers.
Oh, man. No, thank you. And then speaking of influencers, lastly, and who knows, maybe leastly, and I'll start with Carolina, Via One Tequila by John Varvatos and Nick Jonas. So Carolina, you start.
Well, you know, John Varvatos is the fashion designer who occupied CBGB's, the famous punk club in New York with his boutique. And I guess this is perfect. It's like he and Nick Jonas are inhabiting tequila, so they take these shells and then go in and inhabit them. This definitely feels old man club chair. Like they're going for, I think, a legacy look. You know, it's a brown bottle. It has gold touches, a kind of a fleur-de-lis type pattern on the front, which I presume is supposed to be an agave, but looks a little fleur-de-lis to me. You know, this is trying to say we are class.
Sarah, John Varvatos, did you like the Jonas Brothers?
You know what? I wasn't too big on the Jonas Brothers. I know about them, but I didn't follow it like heavily. But I will say that I do like the way it's labeled. It's not like an actual label that's like rolled on there. And I like that it's gold, but it does feel like it belongs in some type of club, or I got to be part of some club to have this. But this one's actually interesting. I'm interested in trying this one actually.
That's what we're going to do now. For the listeners, we're going to start with Fortaleza. We need a base of a great tequila. And then after that, it's going to be mystery tequila. Marina, our producer, she's going to come in and not tell us who it is. We're going to talk about the tequila. Then at the end, we're going to have the grand reveal. So we're going to start drinking. Salud.
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 We're starting with the baseline Fortaleza tequila.
Oh, that's good.
The perfume, it has the, I hate to use this word, mouthfeel. But it's not too sharp. It's not too soft. It's just that perfect texture. It's a little bit sweet. It doesn't hit you too much. And by the way, we're drinking reposado. Reposado means it's been aged 1 year. So this is just your classic Fortaleza tequila, Sarah.
I think it's very, very smooth. It's gentle. It doesn't feel as hot coming down as some tequila. So it's really, really good.
Now we go to the mystery tequilas. We're going to drink them. We're going to describe them. And then we're each going to take our guesses to what tequila. Clink salud, of the glass.
Salud, dinero y amor.
Salud, dinero y amor. Let's see this one. Yeah. It tastes sweeter, but not in a good way. I taste like hints of coconut, and I'm sorry, but tequila is not coconut.
Yeah, there's something a little sweet and something a little like this was fabricated somewhere rather than distilled.
I taste like it has like a hint of like some spice.
The spice at the end gets you, and you're like, what the hell is it?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it has like a little note of like some spice. It almost tastes like something familiar. Like I should know what it is, but I don't know what it is.
Carolina?
You know, I don't want to say it's nutmeg, but something in that family. Well, you know, that there's something there that just, but with a little industrial, like I almost feel like... you know, the thing about the Fortaleza is it has this very, like, rich body that you feel the whole way through. This feels almost very thin at the beginning. You get a blast of sweet, and then you get this weird spice.
Manufactured. It's like it's supposed to make you feel everything that tequila is going to feel, yet if it tries to be everything and it's nothing.
Yeah. I would put it in a margarita.
Well, we'll save our guesses for the very end because we have to give everyone a chance. So next up, here's Mystery Celebrity Tequila number 2. Salud a todas. Boom. Salud. At this point. This one's a little bit watery. It has that spice at the end as well, which I don't like. Like, it wants to imitate the burn of a classic tequila, but it's just like, okay, here's a tupiqueta, just a little pinch of it, and then off to the races we go.
Yes, I would agree. It doesn't have the burn, but it's like it wants to give you that burn. It just gives you a little hint of it, and it almost tastes a little watered down.
Yeah. It's not the thickness of it. It's not like other tequilas and watered down. It doesn't have that sweetness, which I appreciate. I don't want sweetness in a tequila. I don't want fake sweetness. I want the natural agave sweetness. This aspires a little bit more to that. And but I just don't like that spice at the end. And then, I forget the smell.
I was going to say, I don't get like the typical tequila smell.
No, that smells like the water, like if you're taking a shower and it's all those calcium deposits, that's what it smells like.
I think, you know, it definitely has more of an alcohol smell. Like you're just straight up smelling alcohol.
It's harsher, yeah.
So, yeah.
The other one was softer.
Something. when the zombie apocalypse happens, you can use this tequila to tend to your wounds. It would be perfectly fine in a margarita. But yeah, it's like so far, it doesn't hold a candle to the Fortaleza.
Oh, no, no. And now the last tequila. Oh.
Wow. Thank you. Take a sip of water.
Salud, skull, all that stuff. And now, a little bit of water to cleanse the palate. Oh, but it started good, then it dropped dramatically. And then at the end, it tastes medicinal.
Yeah, it definitely has a better smell than the last one. It doesn't smell like pure alcohol, which is what the previous one did. This one has a little bit more of a bouquet to it. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's similar to the last one we had in that the beauty of the Fortaleza is you feel that flavor all the way through, and it's like a consistent release. This one's more like pop rocks in your mouth.
Sarah?
I do say, I'm going to say it is a bit smooth. The smell did remind me initially like a perfume. Like a soft, but a very soft perfume. Mm. Nothing too strong, but like.
Like with vanilla,
exactly. Like it has like a, it does have a vanilla smell. Almost like a, not a perfume, like a mist. Like just something really quick, just a quick hint.
I think this one is the harshest one of them all. I think it goes down. I'm getting, like, it's lingering on me and not in the best ways. I don't think it's a bad tequila, but I gotta taste more. Yeah.
I do. I do think this is the one that you can dab behind your ears before going out in terms of the smell.
I think this is actually, if I had to rank them, number one, of course, Fortaleza. This would be number two. Then the second one that we had is number three. And then the very first one, the sweet one, I would say is the worst one. None of these, I think, have been rock gut. I was expecting far worse. But some of these bottles are going for $60, $70. I don't think they're worth $60, $70. Not when you get Fortaleza for like $45.
Right, exactly. Yeah, certainly this is not... This is not the nasty quote-unquote tequila I was buying in college that was really more cane alcohol than anything else and actually peeled a layer of linoleum off my college dorm room floor. Like, none of that is on this level. These are all decent, good drinking tequilas. They'd be great for mixing, for cocktails. You could make some fantastic cocktails out of this because they all are, you know, fairly smooth. You know, these aren't going to give you a headache. But none of them have that kind of, like, that body, that consistent taste that something like the Fortaleza.
Sarah, any thoughts before we guess?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say that these are, I feel, are like an introductory level to when you're getting into tequila. So not necessarily like the harsh things that, like Carolina said, that we partied hard with.
Yeah.
But this is something like if you're going to make this a hobby where you're going to get into tequila, I think these would be like a starting point to get into.
No, that's a good point. I mean, and that's one of the things actually that the tequila, the man behind Fortaleza himself said, that with all these celebrity tequilas, well, introduces Americans to the idea of tequila. And hopefully, I hope that they're going to graduate to my tequila eventually. So it's a conversation to have with a lot of tequila, Fortaleza tequila. Well, let's take our guesses. What tequilas do we think go? So we had three tequilas. I'm going to start first. I'm going to say that the first tequila, the sweet tequila, was Jaja tequila. The second tequila, which tasted more industrial, I'm going to put that to John Varvatos and Nick Jonas. And then the third one, it tasted to me the one that really tried to be as tequila as possible. I'm going to give that to The Rock. Carolina.
I'm with you on that one. And I think it's definitely got that last one says to me taste of The Rock.
Sarah, what's your
pick? I am going to agree. I had the same thoughts on each one on the same lineup that you had.
Oh, damn.
And definitely I think that the last one, when we said that the label from The Rock was like a classic, like clean, that's what I tasted.
Marina Peña, our producer, please tell us what are the tequilas number 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, so the first one is Jaja.
Aha,
yeah.
We got it.
The second one is Tremana.
Oh, that's The Rock.
Yeah. Oh.
And the third one is Visha One.
Damn, that's Nick Jonas and John Varvatos. So we only got 1 out of 3 right. So The Rock, we expected more out of you. Nick Jonas and John Varvatos, we totally underestimated you. That said, I wouldn't buy that tequila, but damn.
Damn good. I mean, you know, like they're all, like I said, these would all make great cocktails. This is not Rocca. It's not Pirate Hooch. Like they're all nicely done, but they don't have that richness and that cultivation as the other one did. But I think we did have Jaja nailed from the label to the name.
Yeah.
So Sarah, is there hope for celebrity tequila?
I mean, there is. There could be. You know, like I said, this goes back to if you're going to keep the tradition and, you know, work very closely with the producers and give them credit, definitely. Yeah, I think you can definitely produce something very well.
Carolina, Sarah, thank you so much for getting drunk with me.
Thank you for bringing the booze.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was actually fun.
Now to the Tokyo Paralympic Games. We're going to hear from a member of Team USA about her sport, about her dreams, as she gets ready to compete against the best in the world.
My name is Josie Oslikson, and I'm 25 years old, and I'm competing in the sport of women's wheelchair basketball at the Tokyo 2021 Games. I first got introduced to wheelchair basketball at a rehab center in Minnesota. I'm originally from Minnesota and I was from a really small town, but there was in the Twin Cities a rehabilitative sports place that I ended up trying different day camp sports at, and then I really gravitated to wheelchair basketball when I was 12 or 13, and that was a while after my injury. I was born able-bodied and I didn't have a disability from birth, but I was in a car accident when I was 5 years old. My spinal cord was severed from about the chest down. And so now I'm paralyzed from that level down and I use a wheelchair. I didn't realize as a kid that I would have the opportunity to even play a team sport, because at my local school, like middle school, high school, whatnot, I didn't have sports teams just for me. I had class with everyone and we were playing like soccer or we were doing track, and I was trying to do everything from my wheelchair. And then my classmates had these sports teams from like our high school that they could compete on and travel with. And I didn't figure out that that would even be like something that I could do until I found the rehab center. They had like a Minnesota team that traveled to other states and competed at other tournaments against other state teams. And so I met a bunch of people that were adaptive athletes like me. And so then when I found out that there are certain schools, like colleges in the US that have college wheelchair basketball teams, I started to work really hard because I wanted to get a scholarship to play at college. And then I did end up doing that. And I initially attended the University of Texas in Arlington. And I played wheelchair basketball there for 3 years. I ended up competing my last year at the University of Arizona and playing for the team in Tucson. I realized like, oh, there's a USA team. I want to compete and try to get to that level as well. I made the team by 2017 and then everything opened up. I play the position of sort of someone that focuses on defense and sets picks for our big players to get into the lane and get shots. Wheelchair basketball is a little bit different than able-bodied basketball in just the way the positions are laid out. So you'll have like a traditional point guard and you have like really tall players that will act as centers like in able-bodied basketball. But everything is based on a point system because every player in wheelchair basketball is assigned a functional classification. And that functional classification basically indicates your level of disability. So an amputee that is maybe just missing part of their leg or their foot or something, they would be classed as like a higher point player, like a 4.5 player. And so they take up 4.5 points on the floor. And you can only have on your team on the floor at any time that you have five players on the floor, you can have a max of 14 points. Because my injury level is so much higher and I have less function, like because of my disability, I take up 1 point on the floor. And then the team has the power to play more high pointers. I did recently get named the head coach of the University of Arizona women's wheelchair basketball team. And that to me is really exciting because I'm very lucky to get one of the only collegiate coaching positions for wheelchair basketball in the country. It's definitely a whirlwind having to train for Tokyo at the same time that I'm starting this new job of like learning how to recruit girls for Arizona and making sure that everything is going to be in order for the women that return to this season at Arizona, because I'm going to be in Tokyo when they actually show up and start classes. But it's been such a blessing and really exciting to get to share everything that I've learned from like elite level basketball and share it with girls that hope to get to that level someday.
Wishing all of our athletes the best of luck. So I'm back at home safe and sober. Moral of the story? Don't judge a celebrity tequila by its label. Drink it, and then you can judge. And that's it for this episode of The Times, a daily news from the LA Times. Tomorrow, Koreans dominate the dry cleaning industry in Southern California and beyond. But are their days numbered? Our show is produced by Shannon Lin, Denise Guerra, Melissa Kaplan, and Marina Peña. Our engineer is Mario Diaz. Our editors are Shawnee Hilton and Lauren Rabb, and our theme music is by Andrew Eveman. Special thanks to, well, tequila! I'm Gustavo Ariano. We'll be back tomorrow with all the news and desmadre. Gracias.